Welcome to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. I'm Joe Staub, and that is Matt Powell.
Nope.
Nothing.
No adjective? No nothing, huh? Okay.
How we're rolling. I had to save the adjectives for tonight's guest.
Oh, man. I mean, episode 21, we had to go big, right?
That is right. We've been doing this for 21 episodes. We're getting big time. We're climbing the mountain. So I had to get the biggest soapbox possible to put this guest on so they fit. That's why I had to save the adjectives.
Wait, was that a short show?
I think it was the first one in the intro.
I'm sure there'll be many more. So who the hell's coming on the podcast, Joe?
So Mo Butler.
Holy crap.
I know. I don't need to say anything else. You don't need to say anything else. There's a lot of people listening who don't need, but for those who don't know.
Man, for those who don't know, this is my mentor. This is the first person, outside of Jerry Martin. And honestly, she learned everything she knows from Jerry Martin. So it's kind of getting his extended hand almost, who taught me everything I know. She taught me the day-to-day. She taught me how to be the most real coach, the best version of yourself. And she was just an absolute motivator, educator. I don't even know how many other aiders she was, but she absolutely destroyed it. And she definitely created the coach that I am now, which, doesn't say much as far as that goes, but she did a fantastic job of molding so many young interns, GAs, assistants, somebody I cannot speak more highly about. Joe, give some more, man. Tell us more.
So no, I'm with you. She was my first real boss and real mentor in the business. Obviously Jerry, but he was the director. So I worked with him at football and, I spent a lot of time with him in the summer and whatnot. But Mo was not only a mentor for me, she was actually my strength coach as an athlete. So all 4 years of my track and field career, Mo was my head strength coach for track. So, obviously you worked with the team when you were GA. There's plenty of other people who were in and out, but Mo was my person. She was Rachel's, obviously the same way how you know my wife, Rachel. You were a GA at the time, so you helped with track. But it was Mo's show. So Mo was not only a phenomenal coach who helped me in my athletic career, she helped me in my strength and conditioning career, and she's helped me just in my career and in life, period. Someone who I stayed in touch with and talked to, frequently, whether it's a text here, a call there, going to see, going to do things with if I'm coming through campus. Someone who, again, I'm very fortunate to, have the relationship with where, always get the Christmas cards, get invited to the wedding, go to the wedding. And it's the same thing. She was at my wedding, and someone who's not only given her time and knowledge in the industry, but just been a great person to me. I can remember being, a poor nothing intern and, she'd invite me over for dinner or, hey, so-and-so said they need the grass mowed. Go ask them and they'll pay you some money. She was always looking out for me as a person. And again, someone who I'm indebted to beyond any way I could ever repay.
I think the last thing to sum it up about Mo Butler is one of the things you've said before on the podcast. As a GA, I would take my interns and I buy them breakfast once in a while, right? I'm not making anything for money. I think I made $8,000 a semester, $7,000, and that included my stipend for living. So my rent check, my food, my car payment, whatever I had at the time. Mo would be the person that I learned that from. She would take us to lunch. She would take us to breakfast at least once a week. She'd be like, hey, pal, you want to get an energy drink and a whatever, a bar or something? Yeah, absolutely. And we'd walk across the street to the student center and she would buy me lunch or buy me a drink or buy me whatever. And she just ingrained that into me. Every single day, she said thank you to everyone around her who was on the staff. And that's the kind of stuff you just can't teach, man. She just did such a fantastic job leading from the front by example. Let's just get the show rolling, man. I can't say more positive things about the woman.
No, I can't either. We could keep going for quite a while, obviously. But right now we're going to start with episode 21, Mo Butler.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're on tonight with somebody who has had a huge impact on both Joe and I, a woman who needs no introduction, but I'm going to give her one anyways. Mo Butler, longtime UConn alumni, UConn student athlete, UConn graduate assistant, UConn assistant strength coach, UConn head Olympic strength coach, and just absolutely crushing things there. She is all that is amazing about this field, a human being who would just make everybody else smile and also be a badass and an awesome worker, and somebody we're super excited to have on the show tonight for sure. Not to mention, I don't know if I showed you, Mo, but I mean,
yes,
I had to make sure I brought it out. I'm actually wearing my Martin Strong t-shirt, which Mo was an amazing proponent of and basically the driving force behind starting the scholarship fund, getting the scholarship fund up and running. So just another thing to add to your hat right there, Mo. So thank you for coming on.
No, I appreciate it, guys. I'm excited, and it's always fun to, you know, kind of go back to the old days and get to see your faces and, you know, kind of go back and forth at each other when we're a little bit older.
Yeah.
Mo, it makes it sound like we go back and forth. I can't believe you would say that. It's nothing but yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. That's how I remember it. Is that how that worked?
There was some banter when I walked into the office and found my picture in a coffin above my desk that I still have under my desk, hidden. Still have it.
I still have it. I almost pulled it out for your birthday, but I didn't.
I still have
the IV bag of blue blood for UConn.
I have that too. I have a folder called Keepers. It's in there.
That's right, because it is a keeper. Because it is.
So a little context for anybody listening in case that doesn't get edited out. We made a wonderful picture. We told Mo many a time she was going to be a UConn diehard, and we meant that in every way positive possible. And we believe that she will be there, you know, until the day that she unfortunately leaves this earth after probably her 100th Tabata of the day, after putting together an entire weight room, after also coaching 20 groups. So I just, yeah, absolutely. Great memory, Mo. I appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you.
I tell everybody about it who's new to our program.
Yep. We set the bar, Powell, so low between me, you, and Penwell that she had to take people like Rob Smith. Shout out to Rob, the new dad. Yep. Kristen Heavens. And then after that, the bar just like kept elevated, and yeah, it's only so much.
You know what's funny is that Duba and Brittany had things so high that you would figure we would have kept going up, but we really just crashed that thing.
Well, you guys say you set the bar low, but I do believe that it was when I was with you guys that I set the 10-year goal to be a director of Olympic sports. And see? I would never have done that if I wasn't with you guys. And it took me 10 and a half years, so I missed my mark, but... That's not too shabby for you guys to have challenged the system and asked us to do some type of advanced goal setting. So can't knock yourself too hard.
We appreciate that, Mo. That's something we talk a lot about here. So now that you've gotten into that director role, what's the next goal?
There it is. Yep. Yep.
In case this ever video ever comes up,
weren't going to do video, but I could see this segment making it to video. That's all right.
There might be some snapshots that we have to take.
I'm like 90 and decrepit and you get to roast me.
Oh, you know, this one, Powell, I don't know if you remember this one. It didn't make the, we didn't go with this one, but it was an option. Let's zoom this in a little.
Well, one, wow. And two, holy, that's the old weight room. Pal, you remember redoing that. And Joe, I'm a little concerned that you still have this stuff on your computer after all these
years. No. So it's all on an external hard drive. When we record these, I record them to a hard drive. And then in that hard drive, I just have everything.
Yep.
Including one of the all-time great, if you just need a good headshot, Mo, don't worry, I got you.
Yes. Yes, I appreciate that, Joe. That's a little creepy.
Yeah, it's just a folder of stuff.
Yeah.
A couple things, Mo. You said that you were putting together a weight room, and the first thing I thought of was that terrible weekend where you paid us $10 an hour to move that entire downstairs up and down. The leg presses. Do you remember those leg presses? I remember those leg presses.
Because I was so unbelievably happy when Powerlift showed up and they bring everything in on pallets now. And we're on the same level because I was prepared with 10 volunteers for this delivery because of what happened to us. And by the way,
I knew you planned ahead.
Negative 13, which was like a record Connecticut low or something when we did that project.
Yeah.
I forgot about the cold because I was so angry about moving all that crap. That's how angry I was.
I was thinking more about the slimy floor that we removed.
That I remember. That was a disgusting day. Yeah. God, that was a disgusting day. Ooh.
So I was an athlete. I don't think I was technically allowed. There's some kind of NCAA violation in there somewhere, whatever. But I remember coming down into that weight room over, it was intercession, and helping lift up some of the old tiles and then just being like, I'm out. I got practice. Like, I'm done.
Oh, my God. It was so bad. So bad. That project, that was the first project I ever did, though. Jerry left me kind of to figure it out, let me do my thing. And we ran into a lot of problems. And the best was the late Doc Anderson. He says, no way you guys are going to have this open up for the opening of the second semester, and I showed up all weekend with pizza and coffee until those powerlift guys, they weren't leaving until that damn thing was put together, because that facility was now going to open because we were told we couldn't. We couldn't pull it off.
I do remember that. Challenge accepted. Challenge
Thank you. Accepted. We'll be done on time.
Two 16-hour days in a row. I remember that for sure.
Whatever.
See, Simo, external hard drive.
So going back, what is the next goal now, Mo? What, now's your director. What's next?
You know, I'm not 100% sure. You know, I have a daughter now. So there's obviously like a huge chunk of investment in that, and just trying to figure out like what direction I want to go professionally with that. And then obviously to be involved, I've been traveling. So actually the year she was born, we got a new hockey staff, and Coach Cav has been awesome. Like, he's a family guy, so we totally got it. But I started traveling after she was about 7 months old, which, you know, it brought its challenges, and I always found them to be challenges, and felt that it wasn't fair to her. But then this year with COVID, you know, I'm not traveling, and she had a lot of concerns. I mean, who's going to take care of the Huskies when you're not at the game? And, you know, well, what does this mean? And, you know, am I going to be able to go back to the games? We've got to be there to cheer, and I want to help you in the locker room. And I realized that while I had this thing that I felt was always taking from my life in some ways, it was adding something to her life that none of us had probably ever expected as kids or experienced. So that was kind of cool to see that, you know. So I'll be hitting the road with again. You know, I think that's cool. And I think that I've, you know, from a programming standpoint, I've really started investing time in different methodologies and trying to just learn more. I feel like I spend so much time on the leadership component, them getting into that, but also a lot more family time. I think that's really important for me. I'm from a big family, so having a small family is different, but it's also, it's like, I don't want to lose sight of that. So I think I'm at that weird point of like trying to figure out this like balance between, you know, all those entities right now.
So one of the things you said was the leadership component. First of all, your outlook on family is perfect. I have that same one. You always want to find that balance, and there never is, but we can talk about that more later. But one of the things you said about the leadership was so right, and that's something you did an amazing job of, was you took small pieces and made them your own, and then you just slowly built up over time, which I think is kind of overlooked by a lot of strength coaches now, right? Because you come out, they're getting rid of graduate assistantships, and then you come in, you're a low-level assistant, but nowadays, there's such a big staff. There's so many different managers and components. You did it the better way, in my opinion, or the way that kind of worked better, where you can actually go through and you can actually work your way up through a system and kind of learn each component as you go. What was the most important thing you kind of learned along those steps, or some of the most important things?
Well, number one being, you know, this position never existed at UConn. So I learned a lot from watching people outside, you know, just like when the time came to push for this type of position. But I really started pushing because it was for the betterment of our program. You know, like getting that representation and being seen as an equal, you know.
Seat at the table.
Yeah, and having to fight for that. But doing it for the people that you're with, you know. And I think that's what's most important to me, but also learning – someone gave me a piece of advice, said, you know, never treat an intern poorly because they might be hiring you one day, right? And everybody brings value to the program. And while you're tough on them, you know, they're there for a reason. And I think that the biggest thing was learning like all the mistakes I made, you know, and then now being able to step back and kind of take this, you know, 360 approach to just like what's going on around me. What's going on with this person, and how can I take a different approach to help them? Now, that's probably Alana's, my wife's effect on me. She's a counselor. So, you know, she's that whole like, you know, you've got to stop and like stop screaming and just like, you know, think about people.
What's going on around you?
Right.
Hey, Mo, I just want to interject one quick thing. You made a great point. That's why Paul has stayed friends with me. He knows one day he needs a job, I will be the guy to hire him.
I kind of feel the same way about myself. Like if things went really south, I'm probably going to call you first. So, I mean, like I said, you know, again, but I think the other thing that I really learned is I feel that too often, definitely in athletics, but it's probably in all of like the business world. Everything is like, it's like, oh, we're the ATs. Nobody respects us. We're the strength coaches. Nobody respects us. And everybody's kind of doing their own thing. And our lives could be so much better if we all just find a way to start working together better. So one of the big pieces I've really enjoyed is, like, I'm working with the head athletic trainer. I'm at the injury meetings. I report to our head team physician now, who, she loves strength and conditioning. She's in our weight room. She trains when she can, you know, and I think that they understand us more. And a lot of that, though, is doing the legwork, you know, stopping by. Like, how can you not stop by somebody's office when you're going through the building? Just be like, hey, how's your day going? You know, too often we walk in like, I want. Well, maybe just a simple hello. Like, you look a little tired today. Is everything okay? You know, and being genuine about that as well. I mean, don't just say it and be a jerk about it, but, and getting to know these people, like, people won't help you if you're a decent human being. And you know, at one point we had like 25 staff training in our weight room, from the ticket office, business office, equipment room. I mean, I got to meet so many people that I have such great friendships with that, you know, it's so much easier to do my job because they want to help us and we want to help them. And I think that that's where I see it, like in this COVID situation, you know, like, hey guys, you know, if everybody's competing this spring, they only lift 2 days a week. So we can fill water coolers or help move laundry bins. Like, you don't have to bring, you know, you're going to be tight too. So if everybody just gives a little, everybody's lives will be better. And I feel like we've seen a lot of that, you know, with the people that have been up on the front and working. And that's what I've learned through this whole process is, like, you're going to get nowhere if you're alone. You know, you need those people around you. And there are some longstanding staff around that can really, really make your life better and be there to teach you or mentor you or give you some advice or kick in the ass. You know, those people are really, really important. And I think if you're never going to achieve what you want and feel really great about that, if you don't have those people.
No. So as always, everyone we've asked to kind of talk to us, like, you're throwing so much stuff into one small answer, right? So the little notes I'm taking, one of the best pictures I have, it's not here. It's actually in the, like, front entrance to our house in one of our, like, wall units. We have all kinds of pictures of our lives, is the picture of the day we did the staff workout and we cooked a bunch of food. So yep. I was GA, Matt, you had already left at that time, but there was like 18 or 20 people from literally every age group, gender, demographic, business, profession in athletics. And we were all there working out for the hour. And then we went, Nate, and that was one of the things I always tried to emulate in places I went to different levels of success and failure was, to your point. And you said it before, referencing kind of Alana rubbing off on you, was it's people, but at a different level. So you always did that with your athletes, with the people you had to do it with, but now you're in the, both the, you know, employment position as the director, but also just having the experience, the awareness, you know, whatnot, to do it at that bigger level cumulatively across everybody at, you know, all levels up and down and, you know, wide. So that's just a huge thing I think people miss, is they don't step back and look at it like that. Like, I can do that with you because I see you every day. Mm-hmm. But if I can do that with all these other people, I can build that relationship at this level too.
Yeah. I mean, I like face-to-face all the time.
Mo, did you do Leadership 360 with Alana? Did you guys do that together, like, as a counseling skill? Gotcha.
No, I wouldn't invest in that level of being taught. No, it's, you know what it is? It's like, right in your life, you got to have these people that fill these roles. And so she challenges everything. So I say something, and whether, you know, Joe, she's my devil's advocate, right? You just like annoy me all the time and just be like, well, and I'd be like, oh, here we go again. Like, I just want to be done with this. Like, could you just stop doing it to do it? But it's so important, right? Like, did you ever think about it from this perspective? And then now it's like, I find myself stepping back and like, oh shoot. Yeah. I never did think about it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And whether that be, you know, the people we work with or the student athletes we're working with, I mean, it's just people are people, you know, everybody has these needs or these challenges or things that make them tick. And I think it's easier to find them if you care, you know, that's the biggest thing. If you don't care, I mean, everybody's going to know, you know?
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to cover it up with Febreze after a long period of time.
Yeah.
So never mind. I'll skip that question, Matt. I'll kick it back to you. It's for later. It's going to come back up anyways.
Sounds good. So Mo, my next question is, okay, so you're not sure where you want to go. You're loving how, you know, your job is adding to your family life. Your family life's adding to your job. Everything's kind of stacking on top of each other. What is some area that you'd want to work on then, if you don't have a specific goal or you know, director versus assistant director versus another university. But what would you want to work on for yourself that you think you can do to become a better, you know, leader, human being, coach, et cetera?
I would say there are two things that I've, I guess I shouldn't have said I didn't have a goal. Like there are two things I'm really focusing on. So I've done a lot more data tracking. This is something everybody does when they're young and has lots of time and super computer savvy, not me. And I always felt though, I had so many teams in the beginning, you know, at one point I had about 150 athletes. You know, we all helped coach football and that's just how it was. And I got other experience, but so I've done a lot more data tracking. So I'm really spent a lot more time in just like athlete management. And because I am with hockey a ton, and I really hate warm-ups. I don't know if anybody knows that. I just can't stand them. And I warm the guys up every day. So I'm bored. So I've actually, you know, we've done a ton of yoga and I've really started to like invest a lot of time in those different modalities. So I've spent more time in trying to create this more collective picture in ways that I could take this team and make this team better because I'm with them that much. I have that ability to do that. So that's been a piece that I've really enjoyed the last, like, I would say last year's the most I got out of it because the first couple of years, you know, it is you're trial and error, trying to figure out like what works, what doesn't work. So I've actually found that to be just really, really motivating. The other piece is I want to turn out awesome strength coaches. That is my goal. We have our GA positions have since been terminated and they're paid intern positions. Mm-hmm. We had two, I fought, got one converted to a full-time last year. Which is huge, you know, and it's an entry level position, but we just still have a paid intern. And my goal is while it stinks that somebody leaves every year, they're leaving because they're highly marketable. And basically same thing with our interns. So we tend to get the interns that are first time internship, you know, they're not super polished. They don't want to go, you know, they want to go to us and then go to Kansas, you know, Louisville, the bigger schools that have great strength coaches.
I did that. Yes,
I know. I'm with you. And I think that's awesome. But what's really cool is that we're getting the people at the very beginning who are actually trying to understand the profession. So we've, you know, established our intern programming and it's, you know, all the basics, but our goal is to turn out great strength coaches that can think on their own, not drink the Kool-Aid, right? You know, be able to turn around, process, make decisions and decide what they want out of their system. And that's something that my, senior associate Joel is doing. He's the NSCA state director, but he's taken that on. I assist him in that role. And it's been a big push for us is that, you know, we want to put kind of UConn on the map is like, this is an internship that's going to teach you a lot about the profession. And we want to get people to, we almost want to develop the cult that Springfield has, you know, like people know where you came from. But most importantly, they left us and felt like, wow, like I feel like I could take an entry-level position right now and know that, you know, the X's and O's to write a good, solid, basic program and to feel, you know, relatively confident on the floor. And I think that's like the next thing, right? We talk about leadership and mentorship, but actually investing the time into those individuals and saying like, hey, we already have great strength coaches. Like we have a really old staff. Like our staff has been together for a long time. I mean, unless someone leaves, what are you filling? So we want to take the youth and make them great.
So one thing you said in there that I think is awesome that I think a lot of strength coaches and strength staff suck at is drinking the Kool-Aid, right? So if you go to a certain SEC school, you're going to learn how to do high volume Olympic lifting, and that's all you're going to learn. If you go to a certain Pac-12 school, you're going to learn how to push a machine to failure for one set, maybe two, if we're getting crazy in the off season, and then you're going to sprint all day. So what are some of the things you see as far as Kool-Aid goes that you want to avoid and why you think it's so important to avoid that?
You know what? It's not even so much like to me, you drink the Kool-Aid because you didn't do research, right? I just do it because a big name is doing it. Where my point is I want you to ask why, you know, now if you can answer those questions and give me a great answer in your program defense as to why you feel that's important for the group you're working with and how it's going to be affected, then fine, go for it. I'm down for it. Support it. But I feel like what we get in several years of interviews with paid interns has shown me this is like, you know, say that it's either 5-3-1 or triphasic is what we get in a program, both of which are great programs, but you can't tell me why it's great and you can't tell me why you're doing it. So that's my issue is like, oh, I use time under tension all the time. And I've used the 5-3-1, but why? And can you manipulate it? And how would you manipulate it? Yeah. And if you don't understand the mechanism, you can't move to the next step. So where does this go when you're done with this cycle? And that's more what I'm at, is like, just don't buy the book. Like, try it. You should try it. Go do it. But you better figure out why you're doing it and what it's doing. And where's the value in that?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't remember how many times you and I would play with stuff, do something different.
It's a miracle we never died.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. I specifically remember, I think we were playing with Conjugate or Concurrent, one or the other. We were doing some sort of Russian reading at the time.
Yeah.
You and I both looked at each other and were like, no. We're done.
I thought I almost died after the 10 by 10. I tried the 10 by 10. That was great. Made 5 by 10 a lot better.
Yeah, made 5 by 10 way better.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and I think there's value to that, you know, trying the things that you do. You know, I think you hit a point where you don't need to anymore, and you've got to be careful about burnout. And that's been another top priority for me, is I want go-getters.
So I was going to get to it. I was going to get to it for how you deal with it and then how you deal with those who work for and with you. So big question, which way do you want to go up to you?
I don't know that I should answer that. You know, do as they say, not as I do. Yeah. I think I'm just wired wrong, and I don't know how to turn off. Mm-hmm. It's become my Achilles heel, to be quite honest, with my own health. But since I have moved into this role, one of my top priorities is, if you're off, no one's allowed to call you, period. I'll make the decision for them. Pushing people to take and actually get out of the office. Every summer, Joel and I finish the summer and we say, wow, we did a really bad job with that. You know, we didn't kick each other out. And yet those days are still shorter. But really trying to tell my group, hey, when it's time to go, it's time to go. But when it's time to shut off, we got to shut off. And really trying to honor and respect that for them. So I've made like a personal pact of like, you know, I don't do group messages. I don't text at night unless we absolutely have to. I always preface it with, I'm really, really sorry to send you a later text. You know, asking people, putting out of the office up. And then if they're out, they're out, guys. Sorry. You can't call them. You're not allowed to ask them. I just, you're not allowed to. Yeah. So I've tried to instill that in the staff about just kind of taking that personal time, encouraging personal workouts or going for walks or just doing something that's different. And really just, you know how the field house office is, getting out of the office. Like, you can't be down there all day. It's too much. So that's kind of been more the approach I've taken with that, where I feel like, you know, too often not in the profession, it's if you're not sitting at the desk at 6 a.m. and leaving at, you know, 6-7 o'clock at night, you're not working. Well, I don't really know what you're doing during that time. Can you really be that productive from 6 to 7? I don't think so. Yeah. So I always say like, hey, you know, if it's not working for you, get up and move, get out. Personally, yikes. One thing I did do when I had my daughter was I stopped bringing my computer home. That was huge. And I've done a pretty good job of not keeping, I do have work email on my phone now because we have to, well, I need to, because of just, we're not in offices all the time. But I don't like get alerts from it or anything. I have a do not disturb feature on my phone. Goes on at like 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Doesn't come back on till 7 or 8 the next morning. Trying to do like little things like that. You know, the COVID situation is weird because it's, you know, your phone just ringing whenever it rings. But, you know, trying to do a better job of like summers, we're doing morning workouts, you know, everybody's out by 3. Absolutely. And ideally 1 o'clock, you know, and the only time you're allowed to grind past is if you're getting ready to go on vacation, you just got to get your stuff done so you can get out. So trying to be better about that, but also have created balance. I read this really awesome article. I can't tell you who wrote it. I don't remember because I've had too many concussions, but I read this article by this woman. She's a CEO or whatnot for a company, but she was saying how she was heavily criticized about work-life balance. And basically what she would do is get up at 6 a.m, do work emails. But on the flip side, her job allowed her to go at 2 p.m. to her kid's school to see whatever was going on or pick her kid up from, which if you were on a 9-to-5, you wouldn't be able to do that. So she talked about, you know, work-life balance is potentially creating a different form of balance for yourself, right? So I choose to do emails at 6 a.m. because I'm more efficient, but I'm also stepping out at 2 o'clock and taking personal time. And I started to look at work a little differently that way, you know? So, you know, I'll work a morning and team early in the morning, but then I'll go home, bring my daughter to school, take an extra 45 minutes or so, you know, have breakfast, go grab a coffee at a coffee shop, and then make my way back into the office. So those were some little things that I started to do, which I felt, you know, just kind of brought myself down a little bit during the day, you know, more productive, I think, throughout the day.
So you hit on a couple things. One, I actually had this conversation in the role that I'm in now, totally outside of athletics. I'm looked at as crazy because I do more than like straight 9 to 5. Like most, and again, most people are 9 to 5 hourly or entry mid-level salary employees. So that's just normal to them. Well, for me and for you guys, that's not normal. So, you know, I go in a couple hours every Saturday and Sunday, early. Some nights I stay really late. But for me, working 50, 60 hours is still not much. So it's a weird...
Which is a little messed up, right? Like yeah, when you think about what this profession has made you...
Exactly. But to your point of being like, you're just wired different. That's one of the things, like for me, when I looked at getting out, I had so many pulls away from spending 70 hours in the gym and being there 6 to 6. Mm-hmm. And some of the people who were my administrators or the coaches I dealt with couldn't get it and didn't support me having a new perspective. So that was part of the reason why I left, because I just didn't have the support and I had other things going on. But you hit two big ones. So one, you know, silencing the time is what I call it. And that's putting your phone on do not disturb or not bringing your computer home. Or, and again, we're all guilty of not doing those things, but we also try to do them. Like for me, you guys know Rach, like when me and Rach, like, okay, like when the kids go to bed, we're going to have a date night. We're going to watch a movie. We're going to play a game. We're going to like just sit and talk about, you know, we're going to do a house project. Where's the money? Like, we shut everything off and that's our tunnel vision time. Whereas previously, you know, your phone would be ringing or a coach would be calling you or something. So that's a huge thing, silencing time. The other one, do as I say, not as I do. I actually had this conversation with one of the girls I work with, and she's extremely competent, extremely capable. She's actually a UConn grad in engineering. And I said to her, I was like, hey, look, like we had a meeting. She took on this huge project, right? And after the meeting, I went up to her privately and was like, hey, look, if you start to notice you're drinking more, you're not working out, because she's a big workout fan. You know, she trains, she lifts and everything. And you're eating food of convenience, not, you know, making meals, not taking the time to eat well. I was like, let me know. I was like, because you may not notice it at first, but now that I'm saying it to you, like those are the big three that people start, in my opinion, that's the spiral, right? Yep. Your vice, you know, you drink or you smoke, you know, if you smoke cigarettes, you smoke more cigarettes, you don't physically move, and then you eat shit. And mm-hmm. that's stress, that's all these things. So just a big one to, I mean, I think we've all been there, and I think we've all tried to prevent people from being there.
Hey, and listen, I'd be a liar if I didn't say I fall into that on occasion.
Yeah.
You know, no, and because I mean it, like, you know, so I'm with hockey and I travel with hockey full time. I also have softball and women's soccer. So I still come home. So like I'd be, you know, 6 a.m. women's soccer after a game or 6 a.m. soccer on the way to a game that night. And it adds up after a while where, you know, you say date night after the kids go to bed. Yeah, I'm in bed before the kids. Promise you. I've got a late nighter. I'll be out cold. She'll be sitting there for 30 more minutes. It, you know, but you're right. It's, but I think that's important that, again, surrounding yourself with good people, like that's your checks and balances system, that somebody knows you and is like, hey, you got to take care of yourself. Like you're starting to slip off. Like that's going to become a problem.
So question for you, Mo, how do you get your head out of the job? So we talk about, you know, and what we've been into, the three of us knowing each other the way we do, it was easy for us to go right into the professional side and the strength side, you know, your new role, the dynamics. What things do you do out of athletics? Nothing to do with it. Both Mo, the professional, whether it's a business thing, and again, people listening who don't know you, you have a background in tiling and, you know, masonry level stuff.
through family, your dad owning that business and you doing it your whole life. You know, you have just blue collar laborer because you've always done those things, fixing things, you know, whether it's indoors, outdoors. So what are the other things you do, whether it's for profit, as a side hustle, or simply just to escape, that you fall into? For into the example for me, I like mowing the lawn and doing stuff in the yard because I'm physically doing something and I'm just in out of my own head.
Mm-hmm. I love to work. So when I said I never turn off, when I come home, it might not be UConn work, but I just work. I don't sit down until the moment I pass out. So I average 30,000 steps a day without a workout. I don't stop moving. I'm a little OCD.
You don't so say.
I organize a garage a lot, and because that's my safe space. Organize a house a lot. But no, the things that I love. Yeah, I did floors for a while. That was a nice way to pick up extra cash when we were making no money, right? Because we were just low level strength coaches praying to make it to the next month's rent. So I've done that. I started my own business training athletes in the summer a little bit. I strayed away from it a little bit, to be honest, because it was more work in that profession and I needed a break from it. And then I kicked it back up at some folks' request and to put money in the pockets of my assistants. So I just used my name. You know, we're in a town now where like we're getting to know people. Like it's kind of hard because like, and I will say it's really hard because you're at work so much. That's the only people you know. So now we're in this town and we started to know people in the school district. And so then I started getting people like, oh, you do what? Like my kid wants to get trained. And so I'm like, okay, come in, work with us and pay my assistants. Two really fun things. Well, three. One, I love yard work. I dig holes. We just put a hockey rink in the backyard. So rented a Bobcat, 21 yards of soil. I did 11 of them by hand. You know, we're just getting ready for these 5 days of freeze so that we can get the liner in it and put the rink up. Whole lot of lighting. You know, I love to run the chainsaw and cut stuff all the time. But my two passions have become, I've found hobbies. I love smoking meat. Pal, I said we get into it. I'm taking Aaron Franklin's master class right now.
I know. When you said that, that was amazing.
Yep. So everything from butchering, like we go in and get a cow every year through the guys that run the rink. I got a pig from another local guy back in September, did my own bacon, 20 pounds of smoked bacon. So I've learned a lot that I've messed up, right? Always important to learn all the big mistakes you made. So I love smoking meat and I love doing it the hard way. So getting up, like I can't get up in the morning, but if it's meat smoking day, I'll be up bright eyed, bushy tailed and ready to go.
That's why I have a big green egg, Mo. The commitment. And,
so
and the process.
I burn on actual wood, side burner, reverse flow. Yep. So
you're a hardcore nerd now. Cause I know what that means.
Yep. So I've been doing it for years. My smoker kind of finally died out. And then at the beginning of the pandemic, Lana's grandfather lives with us. He's like, hey, you may as well get a new smoker cause you've got time now. And we all want it. So bit the bullet. I initially was going to have one custom made. I looked at taking a welding course to do my own. Time didn't permit. But so bought a new smoker and I've invested a lot of time taking the course now because I really enjoy it. But so like this weekend I did a brisket, was up at 4 a.m. working the fire in the weather. It was awesome. But it ties me to the house. It gives me something of purpose, right? You've got to be on top of this. Every 20 to 30 minutes, I get stuff done in the house, around the garage, around the yard. I'm back on the smoker. My family freaking loves it. So then I love to make food and feed people. So it's twofold. I don't even eat half of what I make. So that has become something that's actually like pretty awesome. And I have a couple of friends who are really into it as well. So now I have something with other people that's not work, right? We don't just talk about work. So that's really cool. And that's probably the first time I've really had that in a long time. You know, nice. Like my buddy and I had this text message, Mackenzie River's husband, Carl.
Yep.
And we send pictures every weekend to each other of the meats we've smoked. You know, so, I mean, meanwhile, my daughter's told me that Southeast Elementary does have the best pulled pork. So I'm really working hard to win that over, but I don't think it's going to happen. A year and a half ago, I bought a 1935 Ford Model 50 pickup truck. Yeah. So Lana's grandfather and I bought that. Betty, one of the top five names in 1935. So we named her Betty. Nice. She's pretty awesome. She came out of, I'll think of it in a minute. Forget what state park it was. But she's unique because she was a government issued vehicle. So it's not a run of the mill 35. She got two spares, a heater that doesn't work. But no, it's a really cool thing. My daughter loves it. And it's something that, like, when she wants to relax or needs a minute to talk, she'll be like, hey, I want to go for a ride in Betty. And we go out in Betty. You know, we've got a couple cool fishing spots. We've been fishing our butts off for the last like 10 months. And we throw the fishing rods in Betty and go at 25 miles per hour down the road to go fishing in the Fenton River. It's awesome. She's got white walls. I'm building custom railings for it right now. She had Christmas wreath on the front. But again, it's just something cool. Like, I've always loved old trucks. And I live up in the farms and they're going by all the time. And again, so it's something else to do, you know, learning to change the oil. It's mechanical work at its most basic form, right? So like another thing, like my thought, my daughter is, you know, you teach somebody to use their hands, they'll have a skill for their life. You know, so get in there and learn how to fix your own car. Like, I was taught how to fix my own cars, you know, did it forever, saved me a lot of money and saved a lot of other people that needed help. But again, it's just like two really fun things. And it's like when you get wrapped up in them, the other stuff is gone.
Nice. So you brought up a really good point and you touched on it really quick as you went into the conversation. You said you were just going to pick up welding so you could weld your own, but time didn't permit. There's a whole conversation there on just the idea of you wanted to build something. You wanted a custom smoker and you were like, well, shit, if I want a custom one, I might as well build it. Well, I need the skills to weld. So let me just go learn how to weld. And then because you said it didn't fit in the context of your life, you didn't do it. But I think that's something a lot of people miss. And go into that more on other things you've done like that, where you had a big thing you wanted to do, but you wanted to get to Z and you were at A or B, but you missed the rest of the alphabet and you were like, fuck it, I'm going to go do it myself so that way I can get to Z. So things like that. What in Mo Butler's life, personally or professionally, have you become a welder in a sense?
I've essentially renovated my whole house myself with my wife and in a very short period of time. Now, a lot of the skills I had acquired growing up, a lot of those skills I only got to watch growing up. So first time enacting skills on my own, you know, you're only a certain age and dad doesn't let you use the power tools. Like, what the heck? So I think that's been a big one in a profession that doesn't pay a lot, you know, like, what are you going to do? But on the flip side, I feel so much better when I walk into my home and I'm like, wow, I did this. Like, I made this, I built this. I guess I should say I am pretty prideful. I do take a lot of pride in the work that I do. I don't want to turn out something that's less than perfect. And give that effort. And I think that, you know, our home was one of the big things. Lana's grandfather moved in with us and we had to leave our first home to get into a space. And we converted the whole basement. I did get help in the basement a little bit because of the timing. And we brought a contractor friend in and I did all the flooring myself, a lot of that work. And I just had him deal with a lot of the plumbing issues to start. And I hate electrical. I don't actually want to learn about electrical. I don't want to do it. I get electrocuted. It sucks. Turning that over, and it was a different type of project. I mean, that was, you know, I'm in there, I was working at night by myself. We were trading my daughter off back and forth so we could both work on stuff. And there were a lot of new things in there that I had never done, but I was like, you know, I've been enough of these projects. You ask enough people, you make friends who know what they're doing. And listen, again, you're around great people like Jerry Martin. Yeah. I could go to Jerry and be like, hey, could you just explain to me how to fix this? Or how do I do that? You know, I could pick up the phone and call my dad or my uncle. They talk me through it. You know, now you have YouTube, but, you know, I think that's, our home was one of the biggest things because I've done a lot of different stuff at the house that I never had to do in our other house. You know, I've worked on other people's projects, but I've never done all of these things myself. And we literally renovated every single room.
Nice. So walk me back real quick, Mo. So you're in your late 20s, early 30s. if you could go back and you can make kind of a side hustle, a perfect Mo Butler side hustle, what would you do? Would you run your own house? Would you run your own barbecue? Like, where would you go?
I'm probably too young to run a barbecue, but honestly, I probably would have gotten into rentals. You know, that's one thing we've talked about doing. And in the last couple of years, the biggest thing is like, well, you know, I'm on the road so much. And really at 2 o'clock in the morning, do you want to go deal with someone to jam toilet? But if you got into, if I got into that in my 20s around here with the market, and with my skill set, I believe my brother-in-law told me, I think it's like, if you own 10 homes, you could retire off of it. He does rentals and stuff. And I was like, wow, really? Like, that's all it would take. And that's something I probably, especially being in a college town, right? Like, let me tell you, there's a church for sale down the road. And my wife said you should buy it and convert it into Holy Smokes.
That is the smartest. This is why you married that woman and it was the best decision of your life.
Yeah, she's the brains of the operation. I just do the brawn. Like, I would love to go into demo. I love demoing stuff.
That would be good. That would be good.
Yeah. Not like a fine tuner.
So, sorry. So my thing is, what is the retirement dream, right? So I know you've got enough time at UConn now where I know you don't want to retire anytime soon. We talked about that. You want to work forever. You're going to be building that truck for the next 5, 10, 15 years. You're going to pull that engine out. You're going to drop a real engine there, like an LS that goes in my Camaro, and it's going to be way better than that terrible little...
What are you going to do? Yeah. Oh, my God.
What do you got, a 289? What do you have, something terrible? What do you have?
It's an original 350 flathead.
Okay. I guess I'll take it. It's still terrible. Point being,
Matt, you're saying with a recent birthday and an AARP card around the corner, what is Mo going to do?
Yeah, Mo, what is Mo going to do to make sure that side hustle produces even more income and allows you to do the things you want to do on top of all that other stuff, on top of the 401k and the matching?
Yeah. I want to, you know, set ourselves up to, you know, buy a cabin up on a lake. It's something we've talked a lot about. I like the beach. I'm not a beach person. But, you know, like, we go up to Burlington and, like, we're in love, right? Burlington's amazing. So that's something we've always kind of talked about. You know, and the plus is that, you know, I don't have to hustle on the side as much anymore. The plus is with UConn's retirement package, when I was like 23, I signed up into this alternate retirement program. And then I strategically waited out the drop. And it rebounded back up and it was awesome. I had no idea. things they don't tell you when you're 23, guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's keeping up with that. You know, I think, you know, when all this mess is over, yeah, I definitely want to get the summer camp back up and going. You know, it's nice to get that extra in your pocket, put the extra in your staff's pocket, but, you know, and just kind of keep building that. You know, I want to be able to provide for my daughter, but I don't want her to know what we have because I want her to work like we have nothing, you know? And then, you know, one day, you know, she says, oh, you're going to pay for my wedding. I'm like, I don't know. We got married on our back deck. You know, it was a lot cheaper. So make good decisions.
And it was an awesome time.
Yeah.
Awesome time.
Yeah. But point being is, you know, I want to set us up that, you know, listen, I'm not going to die in the weight room, guys. I will be honest. I'm going to retire at a decent retirement age. Because I want to have that time. I want to actually like spend time with my family. You know, my daughter moved somewhere else. You know, can we go visit? Yeah, I am from a big family. I want to be able to have the means to be able to go travel around. I want to travel the world. I want that cabin on the lake.
So what are some of the things you're teaching your young interns so they don't make some of those same mistakes, right? One of the biggest things you mentioned was teaching that leadership, instilling that into your interns, make sure they know how to do that. What are you teaching them that you wish somebody had taught you as you were growing up or did teach you as you were growing up?
Marry somebody who makes more money. We have this conversation on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know, I wish someone told me to marry someone that had a higher paycheck. Joe got the message. But no, I'm just kidding.
It's true. No, it's true. It took me literally to this year to be able to out earn her. And she didn't start a job until she was 27 because she went back to school.
Hey, a lot of people go to school for 7 years.
Yeah, they're called doctors.
yeah, not me. That wasn't me.
So no, I think, you know, the biggest things right now are one, you know, when you're working the long hours and whatnot, don't get caught buying food all the time. You know, little things like that, right? Like food prep, take care of yourself, and in the end, you'll eat better, right? I didn't do that. I lived off of coffee and jujubes in grad school. You know, it's, you did what you had, but I was like, I wish somebody was like, hey, Mo, you know, do you ever think about meal prepping and, you know, filling the fridge in the office? And, you know, and I'm like, whatever. But, you know, little things like that, like, hey, those are little things that one, take care of yourself better, but two, puts extra money in your pocket. You know, trying to get them involved and understand, like, there are camps and clinics and you have a skill that people want and people should get because they're getting the wrong information from a lot of places. So, you know, learn your stuff, go out and teach it well and make some money doing it and be okay with making that money. You know, I always felt bad taking money for doing it sometimes. And you know what? Like, you're just making the money you weren't getting that you should have gotten paid in your salary in the end. Yeah. And I think those are the big ones for them is just like kind of putting it out there. Just like understand like, hey, there are ways to save money better. And there are ways to make money better in this profession. And then honestly, Joe, the piece I learned out of your book, and we've talked about it, but I think it just didn't click super hard until I read your book again. And it was just the whole like, hey, you can say no to a job because the salary sucks.
Yeah.
And our profession has done a really, really bad job. Like, we're not helping ourselves, creating $5,000 positions and you're working 60 hours a week. Yeah. And that's acceptable. Fine. And unfortunately, we have so many strength coaches now that those positions are going to continue to exist because people are desperate for a job. Yeah. So, you know, that's become a piece of advice that I've started to put out. Like, hey, if it's not the right job, you don't take it because it pays the bills. Now, if you're in a situation you can't pay your bills, you know, maybe you think about it a little differently. There are other ways to look at it. And you know what? I always said, I go, listen, if I got fired today, I'm a job at Home Depot is not above me.
No.
I'll do what I got to do to support my family. So maybe you take a different job and work that job. But if that job's not going to allow you to make a decent living, maybe it's not the best job for you.
So you hit on a bunch of stuff there. One thing, a comment I make, and again, we're not giving advice, financial advice and shit, but I retirement, should. Like, yeah, but no, but you brought up a great point. Like, if you're working in a job that's giving you a retirement, if you work in the university space and you have 401k, 403b, whatever your school provides you, put the most you can possibly put into it, live off the rest, because when you're 23, it doesn't matter. But then 20 years later, you actually have a lot of money saved. It's like crazy. People don't put anything into it.
Financial advisor, you know, these guys sign draft, right? Guys get drafted. They sign a contract and boom, they get locked up with a financial advisor. My brother's company used to have an entire division just for pro athletes to help them not blow that signing bonus. Right. Yeah. And like, why would that be any different? Like, yeah, it's hard because you're making that investment up front. But man, if I had a financial advisor when I was 23 to one, tell me what the heck I just signed. And also two, to say, hey, listen, like, this is the best way to make this money work.
Yeah. Well, for anyone who has those resources, and again, I've wrote about this, I've talked about it all the time, like, we had those at UConn. We didn't always know we could access them because it wasn't something communicated. But and again, that's the microcosm of athletics versus the university, human resources and support. Like, you, if you are at a place that gives you those things, retirement, whatever, ask to meet with the advisor. They literally pay to have a person you can talk to. Like, it's like going to a library and downloading articles. Like, you have access, whether you choose to use it or not is a whole other problem.
I just met that guy three years ago because we got to buy into the pension.
Took you a little while.
Hey, some of us are slower than others. We get there though.
Hey, so you mentioned something previous about, you work, you know, you had camps and clinics and LC and you stopped doing it because you were doing the same thing. You know, it was spending more time coaching, and that's, and then you said now, you know, try to set that up, but also for your assistants and whatnot. That's something I always tell people not to do is, you know, if you're coaching to the point 12 hours a day and you're trying to train a few people on the extra hours, I can tell you, you're stuck. You can only make so much money. You're going to make $60 to $100 an hour. You're going to coach an extra 2 to 4 hours a day, maybe 12 hours a week, you know, because at some point you're going to not do that. So, you know, you're kind of only going to be able to make another $20,000-ish a year. So I always recommend not to do that for people, unless, with the caveat, unless you can do something that you can make more than about 20. So how are you approaching that? Because I know you've said both sides. So how are you diving back into it? Because I'm sure you've given thought. It has to be, juice has to be worth the squeeze. So how are you making the juice worth the squeeze?
To be honest, it's worth it to me because it puts money in other people's pockets. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about me at this point. Like, and why do I provide that to them as an opportunity? It's convenient. Right. And I think we could all agree, as you get to know our younger group, they don't have other skill sets. Their skill set was to play their sport 365 days a year that they weren't good enough to make money off of. Right. So now, I mean, we've got kids. I've had my athletes as interns and I'm like, hey, can you go get me the Allen keys? What's that? Okay. So now we actually, in interning 101, take out the toolbox and we teach all the tools to run a weight room.
Yeah.
Because you just don't do that anymore. Right. Because nobody's home. Like, your parents are doing it now, or we pay someone to do it because we're so darn busy. Yeah. We don't teach you to do it. Right. So that's kind of the bummer. Right. But I've done things, you know, like I find now that I know people, like I give mother jobs, like, hey, you know, I know someone who's looking for someone to mow lawns, you know, stuff like that. But like, it is nice for our staff because that is their skill set. You know, yeah. It's convenient right here in our weight room. You know, and you can do it quickly after work and then head home. So I try to balance it that way. But for myself, it's not doing anything for me. And to be honest, I've wanted to shut it down a couple of times, but it's nice to be able to say, hey, you want to make a few $1,000 in the next couple of weeks? You know, somebody who's trying to pay off college loans.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, even doing the simple stuff. I mean, I was an intern in the summer working Nancy's field hockey camp, making right. like $100.
Right.
And that again, I'm a junior in college or whatever I am. $100 is like my food for the month. Like, you know, so it's all levels. But I think you made a great point. For you at your level now, it's not necessarily make it or break it for you like it is for some of the younger kids. Mm-hmm. Kind of following along that though, how are you not making sure that it's worth it for them? You know, because again, like we've all heard the stories of people who run the camps and, you know, they make the other people work the 50 hours for the camp and they give them $10 and they're pocketing $100,000. So how are you kind of finding that balance between you taking some of the money or you giving yourself a cut for the resource, the time, the effort, you know, you put in versus making sure it gets a lot for them?
To be 100%, I've never taken a cut. I'll be honest. I've covered my expenses. I take the money, I divide it up amongst the hours, and whoever works gets paid that money. So if I go in and coach, I get paid. If I don't coach, I don't get paid.
That's another good sign of good leader right there. You're the director. You're somebody who's been there for a while. You're the one who, like we talked about earlier, worked your way up. So you know how much it sucks to be that GA who is just trying to freaking make ends meet and hoping not to be asleep in class that night at 9 p.m. So I respect the heck out of that, though. That's awesome.
It's a really stupid business move. But again, like for me, it's like I've looked to like cancel this thing like a couple times and not do it, you know? So I'm like, hey, if you guys want to show up and coach it, you know, I'll pay. Like I've paid Joel to write the program. Hey, you want to make $500? We're at the program for the summer.
Yeah. No, that's smart. That's a great way to do it for sure. And a great leadership tool. So Mo, we're going to start our last three questions.
Okay.
So the very first one is, how do you manage your own personal time and how do you keep that, I'm going to use air quotes, balance, right? So we talked about the smoking. We talked about that badass truck, talked about all that awesome stuff. How do you find that balance where you feel like you're getting a little bit of everything?
I don't think I know. I'm not going to sit here and blow smoke. I don't, you know, at times I have it and at times I don't have it at all. But I also feel like that's the way the profession goes, right? Sometimes you're in the grind and you just got to go. I'll say the biggest thing that I've always known that's made a difference in my life, and when it's off the wagon, I struggle, is always making time every day for me to work out. Whatever that is. Some days now that's a walk. But it's like stepping away. And I know personally for me, I love the midday. It's most productive. It's not happening right now, but I've found if I don't do anything, then I'm rougher on myself about it. So like lately, I can't even believe I'm saying this. I train at 7 o'clock in the morning. I hate morning workouts. But it means I get it in and the day doesn't take advantage of me. So I've learned the difference, right? How to control my day a little more. But I don't know how to answer that question other than when I'm not doing it, feel bad for everybody around me. And when I am doing it, I'm on.
I think that actually answers the question the most honestly anybody said so far. Joe, what do you think?
No, I agreed. And people have given great answers, but I don't think anyone's ever been as just upfront about it.
I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to share for that. I think it's an epic life battle.
Yeah. No,
I'm only laughing, Mo, because I know how perfectly you answer that for Mo. Like, that's why.
Yeah, that's a great Mo answer. No, me and Rach talk about it all the time. Like, I say to her, like, when I don't work out consistently, like, I am a different person. I don't feel right, if that makes sense. And, like, if a couple days go by and I haven't worked out or done something, she's like, just go work out. Like, get out of the house. Like, don't talk
to me. Oh, I've been thrown out of the house consistently through COVID.
Yeah.
Go for that walk now. Get out and don't come back until you're ready to be with the rest of us. Got it. Noted.
Yep. Yeah. I've gotten that myself. Yep. All right. Second question. Total 90 degree shift from where we just are right now. What's the most beneficial thing under $1,000 that you have spent? And I'm going to go two ways: for Mo Butler, the person, and then Coach Butler, the professional.
Is that two things?
Two things. So in two ways, under $1,000 for you as a person, and it can be anything, you know, from the truck, if it was that cheap, to, you know, friggin', you know, whatever you want. Like, and then just both ends of who you are, the person and then the professional.
Wow, this is a good one, guys. Under $1,000. You couldn't give me this question in advance?
I told you that we asked the people the same stuff, and this was one of the things we asked. That's as much advance as you need.
You said it was going to be laid back, no X's and O's.
Exactly. this is pretty laissez-faire for us.
A Starbucks gift card.
Mo, you're telling me there's no piece of workout equipment you have for the house or for anything or something you did for the wife, nothing you invested in that you feel is the best thing?
Oh, my smoker.
There you go. That's a good
idea. I mean, I know that brisket you smoked last week wasn't cheap, so maybe the brisket.
Dude, best brisket I ever made.
Not a girl. Well, how long did it sit?
12 hours I took.
I saw. Internal temp, 165?
No, 208.
Yeah. I was teasing.
165.
How? Just because you live down south doesn't mean you know anything.
Oh, that's just hurtful. I'll send you pictures later. You guys are both be jealous. Stop. All right, Mo. Last question. So one of the biggest things we also ask about, besides just the life balance and all that good stuff, and that is who coaches you and why them specifically. I know your wife has a huge impact on you, so try not to just pick her, but who coaches you and why specifically?
I'm going to say Joel. Because, well, one, obviously we're together all the time because of work, right? But we have a personal relationship and a professional relationship, and we have a lot of common interest. He's super clear cut, and he's one of the only people outside of you guys that I know is going to, you know, tell me when I need to stop and slow down. He's going to tell me I'm off base. He's going to tell me you're spot on and you need to keep pushing this issue. He doesn't have an issue. And I fully respect when it's said to me, whatever it is. You know, there are very few people I respect if they got in my face. Mainly because it's, you're right, put your money where your mouth is. When you show me you'll do it, then I'll respect whatever you have to say to me. He's that person probably, because I can get it to, I get that from him both in regards to, you know, stuff at work, but I get it in stuff at life too.
Nice. Yeah. Joel DeMarco, for everyone who's.
Yeah, know, sorry.
No.
Just said that.
He's on the directory at UConn, strength coach. Find him. Great human being. All right, Mo. So as we close this out, you know, obviously kind of the little things everyone does in this day and age. Where can people find you? You know, is there anything you want people, you know, any closing comments you want people to know about you, about anything, a book to read, you know, whichever way you want to go? How do you want to frame you at the end of this conversation? What's your handle on Instagram, Mo?
I don't know. I do have an Instagram account. Somebody told me I have one.
But yeah, so how do people find you? How do you know, all that stuff?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like, I'm not great with social media. And I think that's because I do prefer face-to-face and I want to be with people. I love to troll it and really for two things. One, people put up articles so I don't have to do the research myself. And two, I can just see what's going on with the people I love, right? But, you know, I think that you can find me, you know, my UConn email. I've gotten a lot better about making sure I stay on top and reply to people. You probably just find me in the weight room at UConn because I'm always there. But you know, I've tried to make a better effort now when people reach out and to help folks that I don't know, and put that time into them. I might not do it right away because just things add up, but I try to make time every month to just go through all those emails and do that. But, you know, again, there's a book, you're right. You win with people, but there's a lot of books. I've read a lot of books. I've become more of a reader later in my life. I didn't read a lot in the beginning. And I think they all have really, really unbelievable information, you know, whether you're reading Gladwell, John Gordon, diving into research, but in the end, it's what you do with the information. And I think that the biggest piece that is we're working with people. And I've learned so much. Every person's different and every person ticks in a different way. And you have to establish trust and you have to establish respect. And I think once trust and respect exist, you know, you can work on a common ground. You can get people to do a lot of things they never thought they could do. You can get people to believe in themselves, and people to believe in you. You know, I think we work and work and work and, you know, you hope they believe in us and what we do. And sometimes you need that reassurance to kind of keep moving through the profession. But I think that it's so important to, you know, understand that, but also to honor it, you know, and, you know, somebody does a good job, tell them they did a good job, you know. I grew up in an era you didn't tell anybody a good job. You shut up and you work harder. You can do more. And yes, you can do that. But you can also do a good job when you're doing that too. And I think that there's something about that. And it's so important. And, you know, that's what keeps those winning people around you. And the people that kind of keep your fire going and pick you up when you're down and promote you when you're up and are there kind of at the end of the day. You know, and those are the people that will help you. You know, you want to leave this profession or you want to pursue something else, they're going to be the people that are going to support you and tell you it's okay to go do that, you know, and go find your passion and, or, hey, I know somebody who can help you and you can learn from them. And you don't do it because you're looking for a connection. You get the connection because you've established a great relationship.
Yeah.
So one thing you taught me, and I started doing it at UConn and I've done it everywhere. I've been head strength coach, assistant strength coach, you know, now working in the tactical space. If I have an intern or somebody that I'm teaching, we had a physical therapist the other day that were interning under us and kind of learning about what a strength coach should look like for a soldier, right? And I went up to him after they were done. I said, hey, thank you for what you did today. I appreciate it. And that's something you do all the time that, you know, really made an impact on me and something that I pass on to everyone I know. Every single day my interns left, I said, thank you for your help today. You did a good job. Or thank you. At the very least, I said thank you because they may not have done a good job. But there's always that thank you for your time and thank you for your effort. And that's something that I definitely took from you and definitely always will.
Appreciate it.
Oh, agreed. All right. With that, Mo, thank you.
We're done. You cut me loose.